You know a lot about golf.
Well, we're waiting.
And that, of course, means it is time for us, and we are here. We being those Weekend Golf Guys. I am John Ashton. He is Jeff Smith, Golf Magazine Top 100 teacher. And we have a special guest. Yes, indeed. I guess you could almost call it golf media royalty. Bob Harrig is with us. And if you have ever read anything about golf, Sports Illustrated or newspaper columns or anything, you know this man's name. And he has a book out that you probably enjoyed about Tiger and Phil. And this week, a brand new book has been released called Drive, The Lasting Legacy of Tiger Woods. And Mr. Harrig, welcome. Spend some time with us here on those Weekend Golf Guys, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much.
Good to have you here. Now, you're down in Florida enjoying the year-round golf weather. Jeff's down in Florida enjoying the year-round golf weather. I'm stuck up here in Louisville where it gets warm on days when it rains and then in the 30s on days when the sun shines.
Too bad. You can move.
Sympathies in the dictionary between sim and syphilis. If you need it, you can find it there, right? Thanks, man. Right. I appreciate it.
No sweat. Just thought I'd tell you how nice it was today. I broke a sweat today. Yeah. Got some sun. Mm-hmm. It was great.
Yeah.
Everybody had to put on a hat.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. It's a good thing.
So how many times have you sat down one-on-one with Tiger? I mean, it's been a habit with you, hasn't it?
Actually, sitting down, only a handful of times.
Okay.
Most of them have been walk and talks during pro-ams, practice rounds. And there have been a lot of those, you know, and that's where the majority of the work gets done because Tiger's killing time, but he's got nowhere else to go. Mm-hmm. And you got, you know, from the tee to a tee shot, then from the tee shot to the green, you can get a lot of questions in.
That's true.
And over the years, he's been pretty good about allowing that. So I took advantage of that when that was possible. Sometimes in pro-ams, you know, maybe a walk with him for a hole or two when he's gotten bored with the pro-am partners, or, you know, mm-hmm. it's taken 5 hours out there and he knows that, you know, a couple of us might have some questions. It's a good way to get him knocked out. But yet it doesn't really waste his time because he's got to be there anyway.
Right.
So it worked out that way. The actual number of times I probably sat at a table with him, not too many. I mean, usually those were for some ulterior motive. He was promoting something or, mm-hmm. you know, or he was part of a group, or, you know, it was a group media session, which there's been many of those, obviously. Tiger has done numerous news conferences over the years, which I've been part of too.
When he plays in a pro-am, I mean, somebody that, the caliber of a Tiger Woods, do the guys at the tournament make sure they put some very, very good players in his group, or is he nice to people even though they may not be stellar golfers themselves? Or how does somebody who's as good as Tiger deal with normal golfers?
Well, he's almost always put with the CEO of the title sponsor or you know, one of the big sponsors at the event. So that doesn't necessarily mean they're good golfers.
No, that's true.
I've seen plenty of top shots and, you know, guys who are out there, maybe they play 3 or 4 times a year. Tiger's probably seen it all. And, you know, he tries to engage with them a little bit. I wouldn't say that he's the most engaged. You know, there's a lot of, you know, a guy like Padraig Harrington, he's going to have your swing figured out by the end of it. Okay. And he's going to give you advice and tell you. Tiger's more hands-off that way. He's going to talk. He's going to tell a few stories. He might line up putts. But for the most part, he's going to let them do their thing. And he's, you know, typically working on his game too, getting into practice, trying to learn the course. But, you know, Tiger over the years has hardly ever missed a pro-am. He's always been required to play in them. He's very rarely opted out. And, you know, that's part of the scene for him at all these tournaments over the years.
Yeah. That's part of the gig, right? You gotta,
right.
You got to stroke the folk, the guys who actually pay for all it, you know? Tiger's given credit for the great interest growth in golf from the time he started playing until now. And I'm sure you probably agree that he has been the catalyst for golf's big growth here in the past 20, 25 years.
Probably not as much as was hoped.
Really?
Tiger clearly brought the game to the masses, and there's a group of people who followed along, but I don't know if they captured as many of them as they had hoped.
Okay.
I think to this day, there are people who will tune into a golf telecast to watch just because Tiger's playing.
Yeah.
But they might not otherwise be golf fans.
Okay.
Was there truth in that, right?
Was there some number of people who were fringe golf fans who got more interested in golf because of Tiger and stuck around? Probably. I think so.
I would agree.
I think a decent number, but not a huge number. Because typically what you see is the golf ratings are kind of what they've always been. There is a steady audience of golf people. That the networks love it because they reach their core group of people that they want to advertise to. Mm-hmm. They don't need mass numbers.
No.
When people talk about, oh my God, golf doesn't have, you know, look at what the numbers are. They're probably pretty good for what the sponsors are looking for. And then when Tiger plays, or if there's something going, you know, the majors, obviously it spikes.
Sure.
Because it brings on a casual guy.
But what about players? I know a lot of urban kids have been looking at golf as a serious sport since Tiger's rise to fame.
I think Tiger would say that not enough has been done in that area.
Okay.
You know, he made golf cool.
Yeah.
Here was a guy who's an athlete who works out, who thinks it's important to be fit and plays golf, and you see the benefits from it. And I think that made the game cool to people. Like, it wasn't the stodgy, you know, sport. It wasn't the thing that you hear, oh, you know, golfers aren't athletes. I think Tiger proved that being an athlete helps you as a golfer.
I think he convinced everyone else too, didn't he?
And it might have attracted people to the sport.
Yeah.
But it still has the same issues that it had before him. And, you know, if he attracted more minority people to the game, which was the hope, which he has hoped, or people who are without means, there's still a very big disconnect. You know, it's a much easier to succeed in golf if your parents are members of a club and can get you lessons and equipment. You know, equipment's expensive. And look, there's a lot of programs out there to expose the game for free, like the First Tee. It's everywhere. That gives opportunities. It gets them exposed. But now there needs to be a next step. That kid who's 8 or 10 or 12 who picks up golf and is allowed to use clubs at the First Tee facility and starts to like it, maybe develop. Well, how do you keep them in the game? You know, it's still expensive. Access is still expensive. You know, golf is in a boom right now. Like, why would a golf course give away tee times right now? It doesn't need to,
right?
Because it's so popular. COVID has really helped golf.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think in America, in the U.S., we still have issues. Other countries have golf federations where they try to identify players and then they will put them in programs and pay for it. And, you know, we don't really have that. We have the AJGA, which is a great place to hone your skills, but it's not cheap.
Yeah,
you know, and a guy like Justin Thomas was a you know, like a, just to point out one guy, you know, he was kind of like a pseudo tour player as a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he played AJGA events all over the country. You know, his dad was a golf pro. So obviously he had that doesn't mean that he was, you know, obviously filthy, you know, with coming from money, but his dad at least was able to help him learn the game, and he's still his coach.
Yeah.
You know, having those advantages, obviously you still have to have the ability, but that's a good starting point, and I'm not sure we have enough of that.
That's something to pursue. I think I'm sure Jeff and his compatriots should be thinking about doing stuff like that too, man. I mean that.
Well, there's a few things to touch on the junior tour thing that we just mentioned, right? The real reason for that is that the colleges got a lot more expensive and everybody's looking for a scholarship. So parents are spending essentially the college tuition on golf tournaments, golf instruction, and travel and food and tournament expenses and all these things and equipment. And it's blowing my mind how many times I've helped 56 kids from Southern Indiana get to college on scholarships. And I watch what happens and I see these parents and they're looking at me like I'm their financial plan. I quickly sit them down and say, do you have any idea what this is about to cost you over the next 3 years in traveling and tournaments just to get the kind of exposure that you're thinking about to get little Johnny a college scholarship that's worth maybe 15 grand a year?
Won't even pay for the full thing. Golf doesn't probably give too many full rides.
And it's at the discretion of the coach and the school. How much money does the school have? The NCAA says, okay, yeah, sure. You've got 6 scholarships, but you're like, wait a minute, how are they divvied up? And what does the money, how much does the college coach actually have to offer? And the honest answer is not as much as what all the parents think or hope for.
Yeah, that's right. Not enough to make it worthwhile sometimes.
It's expensive. So that whole junior tour thing is like some kids, that's their existence, and they flame out after that. That's when they peak.
Bob Harrigan is our guest here on Those Weekend Golf Guys, and he's written a new book called Drive, The Lasting Legacy of Tiger Woods. And I think when we come back from this quick break, we're going to ask him, what is the lasting legacy of Tiger Woods? You got to promise her that you still read the book, even if it gives a secret away. We are Those Weekend Golf Guys. We will be right back. Hang on. And thanks for hanging. Coming back, we are still Those Weekend Golf Guys. I'm John Ashton. Golf Magazine Top 100 instructor Jeff Smith is with us, along with Bob Herrig, golf journalist, writer par excellence, and writes for Sports Illustrated, written for ESPN. And all. If they talk about golf, there's an article by Bob Herrig hanging out somewhere. You may have read his book, Tiger and Phil. You may be looking to read the new one, Drive, The Lasting Legacy of Tiger Woods. You've talked to him. You've hung out with him. You've followed his career. What is the lasting legacy of Tiger Woods, Mr. Herrig?
Well, I try to make the argument that it goes beyond his great skill and ability. Because obviously Tiger, as Jeff could probably speak to better, is one of the elite ball strikers of all time. Maybe not off the tee, but certainly with the irons. And even right now at age 48, if Tiger's back is feeling okay, and if you can put him at the golf ball, he can hit those irons probably as well as any elite player in the world. But it's not just about talent and ability that got him to 82 wins and 15 majors. There was something inside that I think most of us don't have. And I've tried to liken it to, let's say, Jeff, that I really wanted – let's say I wanted to be a single-digit handicap golfer, and you were going to work with me. You told me I had to lay out for myself what I was going to do every day. And let's say on the fifth day, I just sort of wasn't into it, and I come up with some excuse, right? Maybe I'm tired. Maybe my back's hurting. Maybe, work beckons. Well, Tiger never let that happen.
No.
If there was a plan, he was sticking to it. He was incredibly committed and dedicated and obviously had a great work ethic. But I try to point out that there are numerous instances in his career where you point to things that go beyond his skill. One of them is the 142 straight cuts that he made. I think it's probably one of the most underappreciated accomplishments in sports, because obviously, it doesn't mean that you're winning. But you can't win if you're not there for the weekend. And for 7 straight years, Tiger never missed a cut. And just the other day, Xander Schauffele made the cut at the Valspar, and it was his 42nd straight made cut. He has the tour lead in that streak right now. He's 100 cuts behind Tiger's record. Xander would have to make the cut for 25 tournaments a year for 4 years just to tie. And in Tiger's time, nobody's even got halfway to 142. I mean, if somebody really gets to 20 these days, it's a pretty big deal. 25. What Xander's doing right now is pretty impressive. It's very, you know, there's a level of consistency. There's a human nature in us that, like, if things aren't going well on a Friday, you're a couple over par, you're tired, you're thinking, man, it's hot, I don't like this course, I miss the kids, or I want to get home, I can work on my game at home. You start thinking about your flight, and it's, you justify not giving it your all to make the cut. I mean, I'm sure guys do this all the time. It's human nature. Missing cuts is no great crime. It happens. You know, Phil's missed 85, 90 cuts in his career. Nobody talks about that. At age 15 years or so, or 18 years younger than Tiger, Jordan Spieth has missed 45 cuts. Tiger has missed 23 in his entire career. 23. I mean, even with all the issues he's had over the last decade, it's an amazing accomplishment. I just think that's an example of his drive, his sort of never quit. When things were going bad, he found a way. And there's numerous examples of that. You know, obviously the coming back from back surgery to win the 19 Masters is a big part of the book, and getting into that whole story of the surgery and what he had to go through. But there's other examples. You know, he shot 40 for his first nine holes at Augusta in 97, and that might ruin some guys. That's going to shake your confidence if you're got all that hype and you go out and you bogey four of the first nine holes. And yet Tiger came back and shot 30. He found something. He figured it out, and he ended up winning by 12. You know, that's Tiger. You know, it's just and his I think it really helps underline the great talent and ability that he had, and pushed him to more wins than he might have had otherwise.
You're also talking about
every time I hear the things that you just mentioned, because those are the things that are internal. Mm-hmm. Something that you put that in scope of in Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, Michael Phelps, they never quit.
Right.
They never stopped working, and they never stopped outworking everybody else to a very high level, no matter the scenario. I look at the stories of those four athletes, and they're very similar. Mm-hmm. And they have one very specific thing in common. They're driven to beat everybody else senseless.
Yep. I mean, you know, there's, you know, Tom Brady probably fits that mold. You know, Tiger probably could have won a lot just on talent. You know, he probably didn't need to all, you know, the workout regimen that he had and the practice regimen he had, you know, under Hank Haney was incredible. You know, every day, you know, getting up, you know, go get in the gym, short game for an hour, go play nine holes, go back to the gym, eat lunch, you know, then go back out and hit balls for an hour. You know, the whatever the routine was, it was intense. It was all day. And, you know, here's a guy who could hit it on a string anyway, and yet he did all that. And it's why he was so good around the greens. It's probably why his putting was so good. A bit of a mystery why he struggled so much off the tee. You know, Tiger's never been a great driver. He was way better early in his career. And that was something that maybe held him back. And it could have been due to, and Jeff would understand this way better, but I think changing coaches might have hurt him in that area. You know, Butch taught a different swing than Hank and then Sean Foley. And I think Tiger, you know, that part of it is always going to be a bit of a mystery to people, but yet he won under all of them. He found did. A way.
I remember, you know, I've talked to Sean Foley and I've talked to Chris Como. I've not talked to Hank Haney and I've not talked to Butch, but I've talked to them, and both Sean and Chris knew that they were getting a different version of Tiger Woods than what he had been.
Mm-hmm.
The body just wasn't what it was. The whole scenario had changed. You know, Sean had basically said, I knew I had Tiger Woods, but at times I didn't have the Tiger Woods.
Sure.
He said, no question. In some of the things that we did, he said he was truly amazed at the level of skill and the high amount of fortitude that Tiger had to stay at the top. And Chris was, you know, when I talked to Chris, he had said very similar things, but he said, you know, I had a chance to work with somebody who's already one of the smartest out there. There wasn't enough there that was at the pre-Tiger Tiger, the Tiger that everybody knew and wanted back. And Chris had said, you know, to work with someone of that caliber on a serious level to say, okay, why would we do this, this, and this? And a lot of it had to do with the condition of his body at that time.
Yeah, no question.
But he was never questioning the drive.
Yeah. Sean Foley, you know, got a bit of a bad rap because Tiger was at his worst in terms of his mental state when he came back from the scandal, and then he started to get hurt. And yet still Tiger won eight times, nine if you include the what's now called the Hero, nine times under Sean.
Yeah.
He just didn't win a major. But still, you know, eight or nine wins, that's a career for a lot of guys. It's an unbelievable career. But you're right. He just, and, you know, again, Tiger had to put an incredible effort just to come back from the car crash a couple years ago, just to play in the Masters. You know, even that, I get into that a lot too. It's every step of the way there's going all the way back. You can point to examples of where Tiger had to have a little bit more extra, I think, than just the great skill.
You know, and I was there on that Saturday last year and at Augusta, and we watched him make that birdie on 15 after hitting the flag stick and all that mess. And then to watch him he looked just like the Tiger of old swinging the club.
Right.
But man, walking up the hill after like on 14T and walking up that hill and walking, trying to get him to, I was wondering when they were going to call the ambulance and get him up the 18th hole.
Literally,
it was hard to watch one of your heroes. And then to realize, and my son and I were there and we're looking at this guy has more will, more drive, more fortitude, more guts than any other athlete that we've seen in person. To come back from that, to play at Augusta and to make the cut. Wow. Look, I can believe he made the cut. I can't believe he actually went to the golf course the next day, just watching him try to walk up and down those hills.
You know, Jeff, you may just have figured out why Bob titled the book Drive. Maybe we'll get into a little more when we come right back. Hang out. We are Those Weekend Golf Guys. Well, of course, we have a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/golfguys. Go there and follow us. Like us, please. And we are back, Those Weekend Golf Guys. I am John Ashton. He is Jeff Smith. Bob Harrig, the golf journalist, the writer, the expert on all things golf. And I'm sure you have read many of his articles, some of his books, and his new one is out, Drive, Lasting Legacy of Tiger Woods. He's left a mark on the rest of the golfers also, hasn't he, wouldn't you say, by virtue of how hard they had to work to keep up with him?
No question. You know, Phil has said that. You know, Phil's been asked, how much more might you have won if there was no Tiger? And Phil would say, you know, I've thought about that. Tiger made me work harder. Mm-hmm. I knew that I had to get better. You know, if you think about it, Phil was well into his career before he started winning majors. And then Phil kind of figured it out. You know, there was that stretch there, you know, where Phil won the Masters in 04, Tiger won it in 05, Phil won it in 06. Mm-hmm. Phil also won a PGA in there. He had Phil had a great chance to win three straight majors. He blew the Wingfoot US Open. You know, he was going toe to toe with Tiger there for a while, but it took him some time to figure it out. And I think that Tiger made him work harder on a short game, made him work harder at various aspects of his game. And his fitness. And look, you know, Phil was able to win a major at age 50 because he kept himself in decent shape.
Yeah.
You know, he avoided the injuries that Tiger had. He wasn't going to be that good, I don't think, if he hadn't had somebody to push him. And And I think that's the case with the younger guys. They looked up to Tiger, working out, being fit, became a badge of honor. It's something to be proud of and something that you needed to do. Whereas back in the day, you know, it was somewhat frowned upon at times, you know, the idea of working out too much.
Yeah.
And Tiger changed that. And now, you know, there's a reason there's fitness trailers at every tour stop and all sorts of health stuff and nutrition stuff and all the things
That's all recent. You never got that in the days of, you know, Palmer and those guys, man.
Yeah. It was 12 ounce curls back in those days. And now you don't see too many guys staying out late.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely the game has changed, and it has changed also for the amateurs, because you look as an amateur, you look at what's going on the pro tours when you watch golf and you go, you know, these guys are getting really good because they're getting stronger. They're working out, they're working on their legs and their trunks and all that kind of stuff. Maybe I should do that too. Maybe I could get better if I did that. And I think it's filtered down to the ranks of us hackers.
Sure. I mean, you know, I think there's something to be said even just for flexibility and stretching and doing those things properly. And, you know, probably one of the things that hurts the amateur golfer is the fact that we all ride golf carts so much, you know, it's a different game if you walk.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, there's reasons why that isn't going to always be possible. If you had to walk all the time, you'd probably want to put in more effort into having stronger legs, and because your legs start to weaken towards the end of a round, mm-hmm. And all those factors like that. But there's no doubt that I think people recognize that, you know what, if I'm in better shape, my golf swing's going to probably be better too.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got strong legs because you've played a lot of golf and you've walked an awful lot, you tend to play better because that's where the power is, mm-hmm. right? That's your connection to the ground. That's how you're going to use it. That's how you're going to twist, turn, push. That's what's going to happen. And it comes from your legs. So the more you walk, the stronger they get, the more power you can produce, folks. It's not too hard to figure that out.
Yeah. Right. Yep. It's pretty simple.
You don't even have to walk. I keep telling you, there was that time when we were given the free workout with a trainer and the whole bit while we were on the radio, just so we talk about it. And the whole leg press thing, man, I was, after a couple months on that, I was hitting the ball rather crisply.
Yeah.
You know, and you think I would have kept up with it, but when they told me I had to pay for it myself, I said, nah.
Look, it's a radio guy. You get everything for free.
That's right.
We don't pay for stuff.
We don't pay for anything.
That's exactly what that is.
Yeah.
So, Bob, tell me about, you know, some of the times you spent with Tiger Woods that you were not asking him questions. He was just there. What's your sense? What's your take? What's behavior? What is he screwing around, having a good time, joking around, or is he a little bit more pensive and stern? What do you think?
No, there. I have one great example of that. In 2013, 11 years ago now, Tiger, the tournament went over to a Monday at Bay Hill, and Tiger, I think he beat Ricky Fowler down the stretch. Justin Rose might have been in it. But anyway, he won at Bay Hill. I think it was his third win of the year already, early that year. He was back to number one in the world. And, you know, they were done by like 11 o'clock, noon, something like that. And I was in the media center, and somebody said to me and one of my colleagues, hey, Tiger's in the locker room. And he said, if you guys are done, come on in there. I'm like, that was kind of weird. Like, what's he doing? And so we go in there, and Tiger is sitting at a table with Joe LaCava, his caddy, and with another tour player named Thorbjørn Olesen, who's actually in the Masters this year.
All right, we got to stop you. We got to stop you. Okay, so that Thorbjørn Olesen is one of the few tour players that we actually ever talked about on our show on any regular basis because we love saying his name.
Yeah.
It's like the Swedish chef, right, on the Muppets, right? We love that guy.
I'm not quite sure why he was there. I think there was a Nike connection, and then there was another guy there, like one of Tiger's, wasn't his agent, but somebody else was there. But anyway, this was like a mini celebration, and all of these guys had had a few to drink, and they were having a good time. They were enjoying the moment. Joe had had a lot to drink. They were offering my colleague and myself something to drink, and I still had work to do. So we just said, no, we're just going to chat. And there were some stories told. And so the way that tournament ended was Tiger had a lead on the last hole, and he drove it into the rough on 18, which of course is a treacherous hole. And there was no reason to go for the green. He was just going to play it out down the left side and then, and get it on the green and take care of things. Well, while we're in there, Arnold Palmer walks in and he goes into the bathroom and he's at the sink washing his hands. And it's sort of at the other end of the room. And in all in good fun, he's calling Tiger another name for a wimp. Am I allowed to say it on here?
We don't care.
He's at the top of his lungs calling Tiger a pussy for laying up on 18. And Tiger is howling, laughing, like tears coming down his eye. He's loving it. He's loving the abuse. And it was just kind of a neat scene to kind of capture this. And Joe's having a good time. And you know, Arnie, of course, loved it when Tiger won his tournament. You know, it was just like the biggest thrill for him. And that was Tiger's eighth win there. Yeah. You know, that was the last time he won there. But anyway, it was just kind of, you know, this was probably like an hour glimpse into Tiger letting his hair down a little bit. There was no interview or there was no like asking him any in-depth questions. It was just all in fun. And it was kind of a neat scene. And it's probably the only time I've ever been part of something like that with him. You know, there was maybe a lunch here or there, a time where he might be eating and we're interviewing him or whatever, but nothing like that.
I mean, those are the cool moments that make doing what you do for a living all worthwhile.
So, yeah, that was pretty cool. Yeah,
you're not the journalist taking care or watching for a story. You're just one of the guys. And they're not the pro golfer. They're just another one of the guys. That's when it all gets to be fun again.
No doubt.
So just real quick, you think Tiger's responsible for Charlie trash talking so well, or is it somebody else?
Oh, no question. I don't think that has any, I think there's no doubt about it. Justin Thomas might have something to say about that too, because they're pretty close and they've played some golf together. You know, it's uncanny. Charlie has the same mannerisms as his dad.
He does.
The way he marks a golf ball, the way he picks a tee out of the ground, even his swing is similar. You know, the way he rubs his nose, it's pretty wild. It's great that he likes golf. I hope he's allowed to pursue it and love it and figure it out going forward. I think it's tough that he's been scrutinized a little bit.
He's a kid.
Nobody's going to be Tiger. He's a kid.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Tiger had a lot of accomplishments by his age already. It's already unfair.
We got more with Bob Harrig and us, those Weekend Golf Guys, when we come right back. So do hang out with us, okay? We've got a fun group for you to hang out with on Facebook. It's facebook.com, League of Extraordinarily Average Golfers. You want to know how great a golf instructor Jeff Smith really is? Just go to jeffsmithgolfinstruction.com. Check out the information there. And we are back for some time yet today. We are those Weekend Golf Guys. I'm John Ashton. He is Golf Magazine Top 100 instructor Jeff Smith. The other he is Bob Harrig, one of the top golf journalists. You've read his stuff, Sports Illustrated, ESPN, all over the place. His book, Tiger and Phil, and his new book, Drive, The Lasting Legacy of Tiger Woods. One of the things I want to talk about, and we can get back to Tiger and that stuff too, but the irony of being a golf, just steeped in the game of golf, you get invited to a lot of pro-ams or a lot of tournaments, charity stuff. You've basically said, admitted to yourself that you're not the greatest of golfers. Do you find that people find that to, they expect much more? They expect you to be great on the course?
Thankfully, no.
Oh, okay.
I think they know that writers, sports writers, you know, we're, you know, they don't expect us to be any good at anything. You know, we have this, you know, we have this reputation to uphold, which is that, you know, the ink stained wretches, you know, the crumbs mm-hmm. on the shirt, the ketchup stains, right. You know? So no, I mean, but you know, when you're, I guess I would say, you know, if you cover tennis, are you expected to be good at tennis? Certainly, writers of other sports aren't going to excel their sport. We're lucky we get to play the game that we cover.
That's true.
But I think most people understand it's a recreational game and there's all levels of players and it doesn't really matter if you're good or not.
Mm-hmm.
You'd think though, being around it as much as I have in my life that I'd be better. I started caddying when my start in golf was as a caddy when I was a kid. And I actually had an Evans scholarship to Indiana.
Oh, cool.
So it really kind of shaped my life, but I never was great at golf. I mean, I got into single digits for a short time, maybe before I got married, and then that all kind of went away after getting married. I still play. I love when I go to the UK for the Open, I love to play Lynx golf over there, mm-hmm. carry my own bag. When I'm home, I have a group of guys I play with on Fridays and sometimes on Wednesdays if I can sneak out. So I still love to get after it out there, but you know, to play it at a high level, you know, that was just not going to happen.
That's what I tell people when they get disappointed at my abilities or lack thereof. Is it those that can do, those that can't talk about it?
You know? Yeah,
that's our tagline. We talk a good game, man.
Those who can't, who can't, we write about it. I suppose
exactly.
So, but, you know, I've heard that old thing about, well, those who can't do teach.
Yeah,
I don't know. Those of us who used to do and can't do anymore because our bodies are broken up, we teach, right?
Yeah,
just, you know, it's interesting. Bob writes, but he can still do it. He's just being like shy about it. He can still play.
Yeah.
I can play well enough to, you know, go out there and have a good time with you guys and you're not going to judge me. I'll make my share of pars and maybe I'll throw a birdie in and, you know, I might hit a couple of bad ones too. And that's the beauty of golf, you know,
yeah.
You know, I actually one time had the chance to play a few holes with Tiger at a golf course that he opened. And, you know, I was fairly nervous, but like, you know, I just also knew what we were talking about earlier, like the idea that he's seen plenty of bad golf.
Yeah.
And I don't think he was going to think any less of me if I couldn't hit it on the club face well as him.
Yeah. Are you at all conversant with what he and Rory are working on together?
You mean the TGL?
Yeah.
The indoor thing?
Yeah.
I saw where they've got their launch date for next year now again. It's interesting what's going on with that. I mean, because they've got a lot of interest among players to do it. I'm still kind of curious to see how it's going to work. How it will be accepted. How guys will fit this into their schedule. The first several of them are going to be on Tuesdays.
Oh, okay.
So if you're doing that on a Tuesday night in West Palm Beach and the tour's in California, that probably means you're not playing the tournament that week. So how is that going to work out? Like, obviously, at least not everybody plays every week.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see how they do it. I know there's a lot, you know, the simulator is huge. I think there's parts of it that are going to be very, very well received. It's a TV show. I'm sure there's a gambling aspect to it,
mm-hmm.
which will be a part of it. And, you know, I think we have to wait and see what it looks like.
Yeah. It sounds very interesting. They had some construction delays that made them set
right.
it back. But the whole idea of indoor golf, I've played around with simulators and stuff in Jeff's indoor studios, but the idea of doing it as a game itself is very intriguing, I think.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how they do it and how it works.
Yeah. Yeah. I need a simulator, Jeff. Get me one, would you?
Yeah, sure. I got those just falling out of my pockets. Yeah. Look, I've seen the indoor game. I like it. You know, look, I'm a guy from the north.
Yeah.
We got to have something to do, man. Right. It rolls into October and we're like, I'm jonesing. This is terrible weather. I don't want to go outside anymore.
Yeah.
Get me the indoor stuff. And then and around April, you know, right around springtime and that wonderful music gets to play in the middle of April. Yeah. Then I'll start coming out of the woodwork and get outside again.
Yep.
But, you know, it's a good thing. I get to play a little golf down here before that music plays. And then as soon as it does, then my stuff is ready to go for more golf instruction and heading back up north.
Hey, just a little trivia. Did you know that Dave Loggins, the Please Come to Boston guy, wrote the Masters music?
What? Did he really?
Yes.
Never heard of it. I mean, outside of that song.
Well, I mean, that was a piece of trivia given to me by our buddy, the Nashville Music Man.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. How about that?
All right.
Good.
Bob, we are in the shameless self-promotion portion of our program before we leave. How can one get a hold of your latest book and all your stuff? Where do they go?
Well, the easiest place to get the book is at Amazon. If you're an Amazon member, it'll get delivered to you the next day. Yeah. But it's available pretty much anywhere where books are sold, you know, Books a Million, Barnes and Noble. I think even Target has it. You can order it online from those places too. So there's a link on my Twitter bio at Bob Herrig where you can click on that and find it. And that's where you'll see a lot of my work linked as well.
Cool. And we will be able to run into you this May here in Louisville at Valhalla. You'll be up for the PJ Championship. It'll be
looking
good.
Forward to it.
Yeah. We'll buy you a drink or something. Come up early. Go to the Derby, man.
There you go. That's right. They're very close together this year. They're very close together.
Yeah, they are. This is like sportsman's paradise this year. You're going to have the Derby, then you're going to have the PGA Championship, and then you're going to have the Indy 500, all within the space of 30 days.
That's pretty good. I like that.
Yeah, maybe they'll let you right outside the box this year, Bob, you know?
Very good.
Again, I just want to thank you so much for spending time with us here on Those Weekend Golf Guys, sir. And it's a pleasure to talk to you and to meet you. And, you know, maybe if you're in town, you get a few extra hours, we can go play golf somewhere or something, because I'm not good either. So.
All right. Excellent. Good to know. No, it's great. You guys are great. I appreciate you having me. It's awesome.
Thanks,
fantastic.
Bob.
Fantastic. Yes, indeed.
Appreciate it.
And nice we to hope you to, your next book, you say you're working on another one soon?
I am. Yeah. As soon as this one gets kind of, you know, out there and about, I'm going to dive into another book. Yeah, I've got another idea that they've accepted and want me to pursue. So,
fantastic.
I will throw myself into the bleeding over the typewriter once again.
Typewriter, yeah.
Yeah.
And I bet it's not even a Selectric, is it?
Yeah. The keyboard takes a beating. My line is typical. It's not mine. I've stolen it, but. When people ask, do you like to write? I say, I like to have written. Because while you're doing it, it can be hell, especially a book.
Yeah.
My whole career has been writing, you know, shorter stories and, you know, doing it on a daily basis. When you've got this big project and 90,000 words ahead of you, it can be a little daunting. But it's been a challenge that I've really embraced. It's been fun.
Well, I'll tell you what, when you get the next one ready, come back and see us some more. Okay.
That would be great. I appreciate you guys having me.
We appreciate you spending time with us here on Those Weekend Golf Guys. And again, we'll try to run into you and say hello, maybe buy you a drink or something up at Valhalla this coming May. So
thank you.
And next time, you know, get the book, Drive, The Lasting Legacy of Tiger Woods, and say, hey, I heard this guy talk about this book on Those Weekend Golf Guys, and then go out and play some golf.